How do you celebrate a life lived for music? With more music. A Show for Joe, as it's called, is Sunday at Hochstein Performance Hall. A show for Joe Dady, who passed away in May from a rare form of leukemia. He was 61 and a treasured piece of the Rochester music scene alongside his brother John. As the Dady brothers, they played an estimated 7,000 shows over some 45 years. As expected, the show for Joe was sold out. John's with us. John, tell us about the music plan for Show for Joe.
Well, about 2 days after Joe passed, you know, we had decided not to do a wake. I didn't want, you know, people waiting in line for 3 hours to give me a handshake or a hug. So I talked to my sister and my wife, and we decided let's just make Joe's wake a show of his music that he wrote, music that he put a stamp on that he was known for, and just started making a list of those songs, whittled it down to 30 or so, and then started thinking who could do these songs best that Joe loved, people that, you know, Joe loved. It's all people that go back over 40 years, friendships that go way back.
And who'd you get?
Just about 53 of Joe's closest friends.
Just 53.
How it worked out, Jeff, was that, you know, as you and many folks know, Joe and I kind of dipped into a lot of genres. And I'm, you know, pretty much all folk music, but, you know, the Irish folk thing, the Irish traditional thing, the bluegrass, the roots. So as I was working through these songs and who would play, I thought the best way to do this would to have like three core bands to back up folks on these different tunes, some in the more the bluegrass roots vein. And then we named them. We have the contemporary band, we have the roots band, the Irish folk ballad band, and then a traditional Irish group, mostly of ladies. And all these people have played with Joe. Rehearsals have been just remarkable. Mm-hmm. Folks are showing up, doing their homework, leaving their egos checked. And I was chatting with my older brother, Jim, on the way in, and he said, "So it's a big thing you're putting together." I said, "It sure is." He said, "So you're dealing with all these egos." I said, "I'm not. People are just showing up rehearsed and ready to go." And there's just been a great vibe. I felt Joe's presence in the rehearsals.
How old were you and Joe when you played together first?
When we first played music together, my gosh. I think we got two Beatles ukuleles when we were maybe 5 years old. Maybe six, maybe a little older. Our dad played trumpet, so we would just kind of bang along on the ukuleles. And I got a guitar with S&H green stamps. And Joe got the tambourine, so I think that was the beginning of Joe wanting to prove himself. He was 2 years younger than me. So when you're in that age, you know, and you're up into your teens, 2 years is a big distance. And I was always trying to separate myself from my little brother. And we didn't really perform regularly until one of the fellas in my band said, "We got to get your little brother. He's really getting good on the banjo." So it was someone else that talked me into letting my little brother into the band, you know, and just kind of evolved. I don't think we ever, there was one point where we said, "Well, I guess we're doing this full time now." But we never really said, "Okay, we're going to pick this kind of music and do this for the next 40 years. It just kind of happened.
So when Joe died, you lost not only a close family member, but you lost a big piece of your own creative side.
Absolutely. I've thought about that so many times. I'll continue to make good music. I'll play with good folks. I'm already playing with some wonderful folks, but as an artistic collaborator, I think any other artist would envy what Joe and I had, because it was a business partnership, it was a musical partnership, it was artistic collaboration, just all of that, and to know each other so well I know I'll never experience that again. To go to a show, we rarely wrote up sets, but we just knew what was going to happen next. You just kind of roll. It was rare that one of us would start a song and the other wouldn't be on board, unless we had had an argument on the way about directions, you know?
Yeah. You've played and recorded with people like Pete Seeger.
Yeah.
Would that be a highlight, or is there something we don't know?
That, I would say, Jeff, that, yeah, in our musical journey together, meeting and spending pretty much most of the day with Pete Seeger and doing a show, we hadn't intended, we were just going to open up and play a few tunes before him. And he looked over at us, and we were finished. He goes, "Come on, you know all my songs." So we did the set with him, and it was marvelous. We were on our way home from that gig. It was in Beacon, New York, in Pete's hometown. And the Bills had beat the Patriots that day in New England, and we're driving home, and I looked at Joe, and I said, "Man, the Bills won today in New England, and we met our hero today. I don't, besides my marriage and the birth of my kids, it's the happiest day of my life." You know, really.
Two once-of-a-lifetime events, and Pete Seeger and the Bills beating the Patriots.
I know, that's right. They're both once-in-a-lifetime events.
How would you describe Joe's personality?
That's a deep one. You know, as I said, Jeff, he was younger than me. He was the youngest in the family. He was the runt of the family, and there's quite a gap. There's a 16-year gap between Joe and our eldest brother. Joe was always trying to prove himself. I mean, look at all the instruments he played, and played well. He was deeply into the peace movement, just starting with him. He was really into people just getting along. But he was always trying to prove himself. I was talking to a dear friend, a mutual friend of Joe's and mine, just a few days after he passed, and we were talking about the fact that Joe spent his life for validation, but then when he got it, he kind of pushed it away, like, oh, no. You know, that was kind of Joe's makeup. Musically, though, anybody that's ever played with him just knows when he's on, he just goes to another place. And that's another artistic, you know, collaborative experience that I've had with him, that he's taken me to places musically that I don't think I would have ever found that space in music without Joe leading me there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And so it also makes sense that you're talking about him in the present tense.
Yeah, I know. It's true. It's true.
Joe, I guess maybe 12 or 13 years ago, had another major health crisis. I think it was a burst aorta in his heart.
It was about to. It was ruptured. It was about to. He had an aortic dissection, it was called.
Did that change him at all?
In a huge way. In a huge way. That changed Joe. His spirituality just exponentially increased. He claims he had an out-of-body experience. He claims that he started to go to the light, going to the other side, and he said it was like a Fellini movie. It's like somebody had wrapped a rope around my ankles and was pulling me back down from the chute, and I was like, no, let me go, let me go. So when this time came around, when he got close, of course he was fearful of death. He was pretty much at ease. He looked, one of the last things he said to me, he smiled and he said, "We had a good run." That was the last thing he actually said to me.
Oh. So Sunday's show is a benefit?
It's a benefit for, that was another thing that was so obvious to me. Joe, next to performing, and I would say even later on in his life, ahead of performing, was his love for teaching. Young people, especially folk music. And learning to play by ear, not depending on written music. So it was just a no-brainer, get something going at Hochstein. Joe, it was actually booked to do, I think, a workshop or a short course there this coming year. He and I played a lot of inner-city schools through the years and seeing kids that you knew didn't have anything but had promise for music. So he decided to set up a scholarship fund in Joe's name for a kid that couldn't afford to go, you know, to go to music school, to go to Hochstein. And I love the what Hochstein stands for. It's a community. It really reaches the community, especially children. So that was a no-brainer. And they certainly were on board with it. So it's a scholarship fund that we want to continue. This is something Paul Noons, a musical friend and also a lawyer, has helped me set up an account. Canandaigua National Bank's getting on board. So we want this to be a fund, a trust that can hopefully go on after we're dead and gone. And the outpouring's been incredible. The show is sold out, but we've had many generous gifts from people to get this going.
Okay. Thanks a lot, John, and thanks for doing that show.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. Yeah. And thanks for all you do for the music community in Rochester.
Thanks, man.